Hello, and welcome back to the NNE TBR podcast. This is Nicole again, and I kind of have a question for you. When was the last time you tried an author that you had barely even heard about before, like a completely new to you genre? This episode, I interview an author that I didn't even know existed a few months ago, but quickly became a read that I really enjoyed, and I can't wait to hear join you in on the conversation. Thank you for listening. Thank you so much for listening. And if you enjoy this podcast, leave us a rating or a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. And until next time, may your TBR be unending. I'm very excited to be here this week with Amber Kirkpatrick. Welcome to the podcast, Amber.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing really good. And I'm so glad that you were able to take time and talk with me. But I'd kind of like to know a little bit about like your background, like introduce listeners to what inspired you to become a writer. How did that journey unfold? And what do you look like as a writer now?
That is a loaded question. it has been a very, very long journey that has taken me 40 years to get here. the short answer is I feel like I have always been a writer. I just didn't know that it was going to end up where I did. I wrote a lot in high school. I even won this silly little short story when I was a freshman, and I really intended at that time to become a writer. Mm-hmm. But as often happens with teenagers, you talk yourself into thinking that what you're doing is no good. Mm-hmm. And so I eventually just sort of gave up on it. Oddly, it was dialogue that made me convince myself that I was no good, which is funny because dialogue now is what so many people say they love about my writing. But at that time, though, it just looked so bad, and it looked like I would read it and it would just make me cringe. And so I just gave up. I also got very involved with theater and acting, and that took over, I think, a lot of my interests. I continued to write. I wrote a lot of bad poetry in college, as college kids are often do. And throughout even my adult years, my dad also loved writing, and I kind of picked up from him writing little funny stories, little poems for coworkers, for birthdays, or things like that. I would email little stories to friends. Nowadays, I'd call it flash fiction. I didn't know what flash fiction was then, but so I kind of, the bug was always there. It was always niggling at me, but I just, you know, it's scary. Endeavoring any art is scary, but writing especially, I feel like, because you're exposing all your, you know, secret parts to the world. But what?
Yeah, it makes it very vulnerable. And I feel like so much with like reading craft books and everything like that with writing, it's so funny how it's like, that's like an art form where everybody expects it to be perfect the first go around. And that's like not how it happens, but that's like the predisposition. It's like, okay, no, you can paint and you can exercise in painting. It's like, no, if I don't write it perfectly the first time, it's like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I think there is some truth to that because it's captured on paper. You know, when you're a musician, and I'm not putting down the other arts at all, but when you're a musician, unless you're recording, that music comes and goes and it's gone, and you remember the beauty of it, but not so much the mistakes. Mm-hmm. And with a painting, I don't know, because I have done art as well, and I feel like in general people are more forgiving about the idea of artists growing over time or their style changing. I feel like for writers, there's a lot more judgment out there, and that our work is captured in a way. And I think too, it's because it's not just the writer, you're relying on your publisher or your editor or your formatter. There are other people who are involved that can actually help you make or break that book.
That's true. Yeah, I can see
you know,
that.
If you have a, I am a writer who, I mean, I do not hesitate to say I need an editor. I mean, and it, a good editor or a bad editor can really change your story. Yeah. So yeah, it was just scary. But while I, like I said, I never dropped the idea of writing, especially because meanwhile, my entire life, I had this story in the back of my head that I grew up with it. It was a story that began when I was 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. And it was the story, it was very different than what it has become, but it was the story of this boy. I was an only child, so I was rather lonely. And so I had this imaginary friend, basically. But in my mind, he was this boy who had lost his family. And so he was in search of this family. He hoped they were still alive. And eventually he does reunite with them. And it's this whole story of getting to know this family again and coming back to, you know, loving your family despite having been abandoned and different elements coming into play. And I don't know, I think partly because I was not only an only child, but I was single throughout most of my adult life. I didn't get married till I was 36. Ooh. And so this was like, you know, this was my little family, you know, and so the story of this boy and his family grew up with me. And it was really what hit me. Well, there were two things that really got me. I read, I'm not going to remember the name of it. I'll remember it at 3 a.m. I'll look it up in a minute, but I read this book. It was, that's going to make me crazy. That really lit a fire in me that I needed to tell the story. That if I didn't get it out of my system, it would actually continue to eat at me. And then with COVID and everything taking over the world, I had this thought one day that if I suddenly died, this story would die with me. These characters, this family, who in my mind were almost as real as people, would die with me and nobody would know them. And that just struck me as very, very sad, because I felt like they were worth knowing. Yeah. And so I started writing the story for my girls so that they would know this part of me, of their mother. And we'll just say things escalated quickly. Because I was writing it 3 years ago and now I'm about to publish my third book.
It's amazing. Sometimes like when that dam bursts open, all the words, all the things. Well, and that's so interesting too about like the story, because especially if it's like lived in your memory so long,
mm-hmm.
it's got to mean, you know, for something that it's there and it stick with you that long. Like that
really,
long.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So your third book. So what do you feel is the most unexpected place or situation where you found inspiration for your writing?
Honestly, I don't know if I feel like my answers are going to be very cliche here. I haven't, it's not like I've been hit like, you know, a course of angels. Yeah, it comes upon me with a story idea. You know, I often have ideas, not so much dreams, but you know, in those early morning hours when you're half awake, half asleep, it's like you're conscious, but your creativity has been let off the leash. And so I often come up with things during that time. I just hope I remember them when I'm fully awake. A lot of writers talk about water being very helpful. Showers, baths, ocean, anytime you're with water, it seems to loosen up something.
Interesting.
But and also, of course, music's a big thing for me. Other books and movies, I have to be very careful not to be reading books in the genre that I'm writing. Because I'm always worried I'm going to accidentally steal from it. So I tend to I tend to veer into other books when I'm in the middle, say, of a fantasy or things like that.
I have heard that so often from other writers, and that's just so interesting. But yeah, it seems like that is such a real thing that you avoid those similar things. So that's interesting. So let's talk about your, okay, I'm calling it the Gifted Duology. Does it have a different name?
I think we have, I call it the Changed Duology. Okay. I don't know if it has an official name, to be honest. My publisher and I have gone back and forth over it so often. I think we have confused ourselves. I need to ask her what it is. I don't think, though, it technically has a subtitle. Like, if you look on Amazon, I'm not sure if it has one. So you can call it whatever you want. It's fine.
I think I did. I think I was, like, looking on Amazon in preparation for our talk, and I was, like, looking, and I'm like, I don't see it, but, like, this is what I call it in my head. So
that's anyway. Fine.
So it begins with Unleashed. Mm-hmm. And I got, and I am like new to it. I know it was like published, what, 2023. I'm new to it, just getting around to it in 2024. But so what was the inspiration for, like, this unique, and for Fen and Sarah Marcel and the gang? Like, introduce us to them.
Okay. Now this is when I'm going to ramble, because I love this crew. Okay, so the initial, I've told this story actually several times. It's not really that new. This started as a short story that I submitted to an anthology. It was actually my very first submission ever. And they were asking for very specific fairy tale retellings. There were only three we could pick from. And the idea came to me way too late. So it was this modern retelling of Little Red Riding Hood. It ended up getting rejected, not at all surprising. It was so last minute. It was not good. But I remember, though, when I submitted it, telling my mother, actually, I was like, I kind of hope it doesn't make it, because in the midst of writing it, I could sense there was a bigger story. Now, it was quite different. It was more YA than adult. The characters were somewhat different. So the only characters that were in the short story, Sarah, Fen, and Durgan, there weren't, all the characters in the office were just names listed at one point. I mean, it was only 5,000 words. I could only do so much. But so Sarah was such that, and I don't know why I even wrote her this way, because I hate this kind of character, but I felt like it's what they wanted. She was that typical YA cliche, fierce female, who's going to, like, take on the world, and ends up just being really annoying. You know, the type that I'm talking about,
Have you had a window into my head when I read YA?
And then Fen, and the other thing is, it was also told from Sarah's POV, from her point of view. And so we never even get it. She was the main character, because, again, I thought that's what people wanted. And I should have known better. I love writing men. That is where I am comfortable. But I was trying to get this thing, into an anthology. So I was trying to do what I thought people wanted. Which is actually a very good lesson. Write what's on your heart, not what you think everybody else wants to read. But Fen was kind of this rogue. He was this playboy, ne'er-do-well, with a heart of gold, of course, that comes out at the end, yeah. But it was this twist, because he was obviously the wolf, mm-hmm. In the story. But the twist was that he was actually the good guy and not the bad guy, mm-hmm. So you had all that going on. And so, like I said, once it got rejected, I was like, oh, okay, now I'm going to have fun with this. And initially, I just tried to expand that short story into a book. But the characters started screaming at me, and they were mad at me, and suddenly they were in love. And all these things started happening. And then Fen had this tragic backstory, and I realized it was his story, not hers. And then it just kind of exploded from there. That's kind of the origin story, but obviously inspiration, X-Men, is huge. So I didn't grow up when Marvel Universe had taken over the world. You know, our superheroes were a little more limited in my generation. You know, we had, you know, we had Superman, and I'm old enough to remember Linda Carter as Wonder Woman on TV. And but they were all so good. Even Batman wasn't gritty back then. I mean, we're talking like the 70s and 80s. And it was just X-Men, though. X-Men drew me in. I liked the grittier stories. I was not allowed to have the comic books. I grew up in a very conservative family, but I would go to my friend's house and read their comic books. And I loved it. They were just, like I said, they were raw, they were grittier. And I liked the fact that they were very flawed. And yet they kept trying. They were flawed heroes. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not an advocate of the modern trend of these morally bankrupt anti-hero characters.
Yeah.
But I am a big supporter of realistic heroes, the heroes that are very flawed. They make mistakes, but their intentions are noble. So they keep trying. They keep getting up and trying again.
And they can grow from them. Like, it's yes. So... but like there's no conflict truly in the inner growth, in the inner character arc, if they're always making the right decisions and they grow from it. And so it's like I don't relate to that. I would rather see somebody even make a bad decision and then learn from it. I feel like that's some of the most powerful things in fiction that we can see, we can empathize
right.
with.
And that's something that I really came out when writing Finn. I mean, bless his heart. He's so messed up. And he's really quite awful in the beginning, but he's very self-aware. You know, his obnoxiousness, his sarcasm, it doesn't stem from pride. If anything, he is down on himself. If anything, he feels like he is the source of he can do nothing right. And one thing that really struck me from the beginning with his character, even early in Unleashed, is he's very quick to recognize when he's been wrong. And he will apologize very quickly. He doesn't hold on to his anger in a way like I'm right and everybody else is wrong. He jumps in. He's accountable for his own actions. And I really, that was something that really struck me about when he was telling me who he was, it made an impression on me. And that has continued throughout both books, his willingness to say I'm wrong and his willingness to try and do better.
Yeah.
And he still makes a lot of mistakes, but that desire to do better is so strong in him. And I think that's what makes him very endearing, despite his intentions.
He has that prickly out. Like, I had the benefit of seeing like a few of your reels and posts and stuff like that before and dove into book one. And like, what did you say? Like, he's a burnt cinnamon roll.
Yes. Yes. And
I absolutely love that, because it's like he has that, you know, like he has that prickly exterior, but you see him, especially with that prologue in Unleashed, you get to have that glimpse.
Yes.
What a bit of his history, like a glimpse into his backstory, not everything in his backstory, but that you get, it's like, okay, this guy's been through a lot. And
yes.
So him acting the way he is.
Yeah, that prologue, actually both prologues in different ways, they break my heart. But the first one especially, because you get a glimpse of this sweet boy. You get a glimpse of who he was before everything was just ripped away from him. And he is sweet, and he's attentive, and he's very caring. I mean, it all falls apart. Poor guy.
Oh, God. Oh.
It's funny though, talking about inspiration, because I've had some people accuse me of being inspired by things that did not inspire me. For example, a friend of mine one day, she was reading it and all of a sudden she was like, wait a minute, this makes me think of Twilight. And suddenly, and Finn reminded her a little bit of Edward. And, you know, I was like, I could see, especially in the second book. Now, I can see how Breaking Dawn, you know, I don't want to give away spoilers, but, you know, Breaking Dawn, everybody starts gathering together for the big climax. You but know?
Like, that's a story. What is, it's like a story. It's like gathering the troops.
So yes. I mean, it's a classic trope.
It's a classic trope. And I think sometimes people are like, oh, you took this from this or you copied this. It's like, no, but it's a similar.
It was definitely unintentional, because there's a running joke. So the Quill and Flame authors, we have this thing that comes up every so often in our chat group of, we have very strong opinions about the Twilight movies and books. There is the ones who are really like radically big fans of them. And then there are those of us who sort of scorn them, but watch them anyway. But now I will say, though, that Harry Potter did play a big role in the way the gifts are presented. And that actually was a little intentional, because they couldn't be silent. I mean, you can't just have these silent gifts going on. So adding the blasts of color and sounds and all that, I was very much imagining the wand fights in Harry Potter, especially Order of the Phoenix, really. And then the Battle of Hogwarts in the last book. Those two, I really relied upon for the visual reference when writing, and then some of the emotions that take place, especially in Released. In Released, again, when you have the gathering of the troops and this big climatic moment, you use certain things to help draw on what kind of emotion do I want to evoke here? What book pulled this in me, and therefore I want to pull it out in my readers? So that definitely played a very deliberate inspiration.
That's really interesting. Well, and I love what you did in that, because like I never read the X-Men comic books. I don't think I've even seen any of the movies. I'm like aware of them, but I like what you did with the gifts, because it's like, it wasn't super overwhelming to me. And I'm kind of like, I dip my toes in fantasy every once in a while, sci-fi, but I like how it almost had the feel of like, and I'm going to say this for lack of like a better term of like how I can describe it to like new readers. Mm-hmm. Feel of like romantic suspense, but you have these characters who also have like supernatural human abilities, but it's into a way where it's not like this huge a bunch of info dumps where like what on earth is going on. It like trickles in as the abilities like come to play. And even in book one, you don't see a lot of action. You're more like invested in the character story and the character's growth. Mm-hmm. They are really even like the superpowers are almost take a back seat to the actual character. Mm-hmm. I felt, and that's like in a positive way, because I think sometimes too many people are like, this person's cool because they can do this, as opposed to like, no, I really want to care about this person, like almost on a human level, if that makes sense. You know?
And that was very deliberate. I mean, Unleashed especially, it was written to be a romance first with the more fantastical elements just kind of, you know, the icing on the cake. Now, in the second book, obviously, you've read it, I bring a lot more in. But by then, you're into the world. It's not so shocking. And even then, the first part of the book, we kind of restart a little slowly, and it builds. But yeah, I am a character-driven writer. I am not going to pretend that plot development is my strong suit. I am all about the people. I'm about the characters. I'm about the emotional connections. And so that really, with Unleashed, was the focus. And in that regard, it was actually a more enjoyable book to write. But the second book, of course, had its own fun and elements that I can't talk about too much.
No, I know. I'm just sitting here like, yeah. You do have to read book one before book two. Like, that was one thing that I realized. It's like, I'm going to do like caveats. You have to start with book one.
I think for any duology, you know, when you get these bigger epic mystery series where there are four, five, six books, They are set up in a way where you can pick one up and catch up to a degree. I find this with almost any duology because they're so compact. There's so much story you're telling in two shorter books that you have to read both. I did try to set some things up, but it's just it you're not, and I think you can read the second one, but you're not going to understand the characters, especially Finn, because Finn, he is his whole everything about him is a slow unfolding over the course of both books. And if you are missing out on the first one, so in fact, there's a funny story. When I was sending out Unleashed to endorsers, now this goes back months ago, and this is the first book. Most endorsers now want the audiobook. It's just easier for them. And so I sent them the audiobook because in that case we had recorded it early for a few reasons. And it was not until months later that we realized there had been a snafu on the original recording where the prologue was missing.
Oh
And
no.
all these endorsers, and there was one author in particular who was like my dream author to get an endorsement from. And she ended up just not having time to do it. But I to this day, I don't know if she knows that there was a prologue she never heard. And of course, it's fixed now. It was fixed long be it was because of that that we found out it was missing. But I've always wanted to go back to her and say, but you don't understand. There's a prologue and it's important.
You don't understand the tragic backstory.
You need the backstory because otherwise you just have him explaining it in this conversation multiple chapters later, but you're not getting the full impact.
No, that was definitely the part that was like, oh wow, this is like quite an ending that, or an ending, a beginning that really, not like shock for shock's sake, but it's like, what's going to happen to these people? Like, that's traumatic. And yeah, I want what happens next. So yeah, I can, yeah, I'm trying to think of the book without that. I can see how that could change a reader's perspective and in, how you invest in them. So what was your favorite part? Like, because it's, and I was like saying, because I was like, I was telling my, friends that are also like, even people who don't read sci-fi, I'm like, but the romance. So because I, and I have been very vocal about this, I love me a romance. What was your favorite part of crafting the romance between Fen and Sarah?
So I know enemies to lovers is all the rage, and I see the appeal, but give me friends to lovers anytime. I love the slow unfolding of their relationship.
I feel like
And
there's enough conflict in
oh,
it
sure, there's
that,
tension.
yeah, there's a lot of tension. So I feel like sometimes with friends to lovers, there isn't enough tension, at least for me. So it's,
Well, and they're not friends to begin with, and that's part of what helps. It goes from colleagues to this slow building of affection and admiration as friends.
yeah.
She physically assaults him at one point. Now, granted, he deserves it, but no, I love the sweet, intimate moments between them. Those are, the banter and the flirting is a lot of fun, but that's not where my heart is. They're so sweet together. And let's face it, okay, Finn falls first, and he falls pretty darn hard right from the beginning. I think he's smitten with her the minute she walks in the door, to be honest. But he doesn't know what to do about it. He's kind of sworn off all this stuff, and his heart's been broken, not through his own fault. And it takes him a long time. He's not stupid. I think there's a part of him deep down that's aware there's something clicking, but he doesn't know how to process it. He doesn't know how to build upon it. And likewise, I think she recognizes that fairly early herself. And she's a very intuitive character. And so I think Sarah is also aware, but she's very willing to give him his space. Mm-hmm. She doesn't push him. And she also recognizes that, you know, they're both strong-willed characters. He is physically, though, of course, more intimidating. And so she needs to make sure he's aware that she will not be bullied. You know, and that, you know, she has her own agenda and her own rights and autonomy as well. So, but just the sweetness, I love the scenes, the New Year's scene when they're snuggled up together and they're both aware, there's sparks building, but they're still just waiting. But my favorite scene, I think, in the whole book is after they've met Sophie for the first time. Oh. And they're back in the office. They're back in the office together. And it's the first time, you know, they've kind of danced around each other for a while, but it's the first time he really opens up to her. You know, he tells her about his past. Yeah. He tells her about Teresa. He tells her about his father, which, you know, you don't really, okay, I'm going to go to rabbit trail here for a second. I write as much for the rereader as I do for the first time reader. Because I myself love to reread books. Yeah. And I really think this duology hugely benefits. You read the series and then go back and read Unleashed again, because yeah. Finn makes so much more sense once you know everything. Once you put both prologues together. And it's actually, I mean, I drop hints. It's actually said, Mrs. Aguilar, who's this great character too, you know, she actually says it was his father who really stole the light from him when his father passed. And so he's him talking about his father being gone to her for the first time is, it's a significant moment for him that he's opening up to her in this way.
Yeah.
And she recognizes it, and they touch, they hold hands as friends, you know, they're, it's such an intimate scene. And so that is definitely my favorite scene as far as Finn and Sarah goes. I would say I have equally strong emotions about some Finn and Marcel moments, but that's not part of the romance.
No, but it was like, that's like definitely a thing. It's like, I feel like the side characters, which Marcel isn't really a side. I mean, we don't get his POV technically, but he was so integral. Like I was like, yes, it's like, it's got action. It's got this, but I was laughing out loud because I listened to Unleashed in the audiobook. Uh-huh. And I was like laughing out loud where Marcel, because Marcel, Finn's like friend that he's had forever,
uh-huh.
Basically brothers, but like the banter between those two, where Marcel knows just how to push him in certain things.
Oh, yeah. Like,
and oh, so funny. And I love that. Even in a serious book, I like absolutely live for those light moments between those close uh-huh. relationships. That you can do it, and like I love that really good male bond that you yeah. described. That was really good.
You need the light moments because otherwise it's too much. There's a scene, I need to be careful here, there's a scene in Released, yeah. which you have read, tensions are high, but Marcel demands a break, basically, you know, and it's funny, I almost cut that scene so many times because it was just kind of random and it felt so out of place, but every reader I have had loves that scene, and they all said it was the deep breath in between all the tension, and wow. and that, and it was an interesting lesson to hear that, because I think subconsciously I understood that, but I didn't realize how much readers needed that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize before that authors put those scenes in there on purpose. to give their readers a little breather, you know, a little like, okay, I can laugh for a minute, you know, before everything goes crazy again. Yeah, but Marcel is just this gift of a character. And in the first book, he's really the comic relief. I mean, that is his role. But in the second book, you realize he's so much more than that. But writing men and male relationships, that is my love language. I don't think you've read my first book, which is The Family. Yeah. It's entirely based on fathers and sons and brothers. I mean, that is the central focal point. And I just feel very, very strongly, this is actually one of my big soapboxes, that if I walk away from writing books, if I leave the message behind about examples of men that we need so desperately in our society, strong but tender, noble-hearted, kind, and yet with no sense of losing their manhood, sacrificing their masculinity for tenderness and understanding that, and then these male friendships that are like brothers. There's nothing I love more than a brother story or a story of male friendship without anything lurking beneath the surface. You know, they just it's just the brotherhood and love between straight men. if I can come out and say that.
Absolutely. Say whatever you want. But yes, because I mean, we have a lot of things, and obviously, you know, through like a woman's lens, but it's like how many things, like we value relationships, period, so much. Mm-hmm. In the things, like there's lots of books with good examples of like sisterhoods and best friends, like seeing that also from the other perspective, where the male love isn't just, you know, which my kind of thing is like that he's just the object that, you know, it's like that he has healthy relationships and everything like that. Mm-hmm. That's so positive to portray. Mm-hmm. So,
and I think we need it desperately. Even if most of my readers are women, women need to see that.
Well, and I feel like I thought it was so interesting seeing it. And I feel like that's also what really sucked me in is like, Fen, you had these things that, yes, there were definitely like protector roles, mm-hmm. you know, wanting to be that for like the people who they have under, like mm-hmm. being aware of like the people who are under protection, who need their noble character in those dire times. And I love the way also, like, I love the, like, hearing the backstory behind the scenes of how Sarah used to be. I really love how you portrayed, you know, Sarah, because I feel like she was like that strong feminine that isn't the stereotype that you see.
Exactly.
It's like, I'm gonna do this, but he's like, she shows, you know, intuitive and softness in the right ways. That is like, and then together, like the teamwork in it is like they're complementary. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, you don't think I can do that. It's like, no, mm-hmm. it's you bring different things to the table. I loved seeing that in the relationship as
that was something with Sarah that, and this holds true to both books.
Yeah.
Obviously, she's a very strong individual with what she has gone through. But she doesn't, she's still feminine within her strength. Like even at the end of Unleashed, when she, you know, saves him, it's because of love and protecting. It's not because she wants to fight. It's not because she feels the need to prove herself to anyone. She is just going to protect the person she loves. And likewise in Released, I feel like, I don't feel like she wants to do what she's doing.
Yeah.
Like she is doing it because Finn is out there doing what he needs to do, and she is doing what she feels is her duty to do. And that is what's driving her, is doing the right thing, doing her duty, taking care of others, It's not because of some vainglorious, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. It is, I am woman, I am going, I'm a tigress, I will protect my cubs, you know.
Well, it's like nurturing, even to the point where you defend, you know, it's something, but it's not a weakness. And I feel like seeing portrayed as like that feminine instinct to protect those that we can with our ability, that's our own strength. And I love in a positive light.
Right.
So, yeah. Love that. So if this book was adapted into a movie or TV series, who would you play the main characters?
I could not say. I have looked and looked and looked. For my fantasy Until the Rising, I could give you all sorts of cast members. Yes. For this one, I can't. I've tried. There's just because no one is Finn. Okay, now I will say, so Sarah, I haven't seen this actress in much. Visually, though, Sadie Sink. She was in Stranger Things, I think, and some other stuff. She was my muse for Sarah, physically. When you see her, obviously she's very young. Her most recent photographs and stuff, she looks like Sarah. Her demeanor, her smile, you know, Finn always talks about Sarah having a smile that lights up his heart. To me, Sadie Sink, when I've seen pictures of her, she glows when she smiles. And so she was very much Sarah. Mrs. Aguilar, I always pictured the wonderful Latina actress, Constance Marie. But Marcel and Finn, I just can't. They're too special. I can't capture them in an actor.
I know. I don't feel like I'm like, there is like not a living actor that like really like our imaginations build up. And I know so many different readers. I mean, my brothers and I were talking about this because we were like, you know, if you could like, my brother would really love an Andrew Jackson story, you know, but we were like trying to come up with an actor who would like really, really capture him. And it's like, it's hard because especially when somebody is a special dynamic, it's hard to think of an actor filling that space, especially when they're like so many, like, you know, there's so many actors that it's like everybody's using them as the
inspiration.
And it's like, but that's not them. So
or getting the right age. Now I will say, if I could have him at any age, I could maybe see Hugh Jackman pulling off Finn when he was young.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can't you see it? When he was young.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm talking real, like younger probably than movies I've seen him. Well, think Hugh Jackman. What's the movie he did with Meg Ryan? He's come back from time. He's like.
Yeah. What was that?
Yeah. What now?
Is it Kate and Leopold?
Yes. Yeah. Now, think of him with a beard back then, at that age. Not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. Or even more so. Now, actually, okay, so we were talking about the original concept of Finn. I will say there's that movie, again, with Hugh Jackman and Ashley Judd, Someone Like You, with Greg Kinnear.
I haven't seen that one.
Okay. Hugh Jackman in that is very, very young. He has a beard. He would totally be Finn. And in the and he's kind of a playboy character in that. And yes, original concept Finn, even that character would have fit him really well. But looks wise, I could see it.
Yeah.
But I can't like, have.
I feel like Marcel would be probably one of the hardest to cast because you'd have to pull off somebody with that like great sly sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
Like that would be. I feel like Marcel would probably be your hardest cast.
Yeah. And even finding pictures for aesthetic pictures for Marcel was the hardest one. Yeah. He was the hardest one because you're looking for somebody of a very specific ethnic background for one. Young, he's easy on the eyes himself, but he's not as obviously, you know, manly, studly as Finn is, you know. But yeah, you need that little glint in his eyes. But he's a strong character in and of his own right. So I mean, you need somebody.
I can totally. I just can't think of what actor.
Right.
That's awesome though. Yeah. It's so, I love it how it's like, even, you know, those characters, they live rent free in my mind. So if you could co-write a book with any author living or dead, who would it be and why?
This was really hard. There's a lot of authors who I admire.
Yeah.
I would want to learn from or mentor with, but to co-write a book, that's a very scary proposition. Most writers are very controlling over their own characters.
This is the first time I've asked the question. So,
I'm the guinea pig. Okay, so I came up with three for different reasons. Okay, so one is really out of left field. I don't know if you know of Andrew Peterson. He's a songwriter, singer, but he also wrote the Wing Feather books for middle grade.
Oh, I've seen that around.
You know, I'm a mom, so I read a lot of things aside from the adult stuff. His Wing Feather series runs the gamut of wacky, whimsical humor to just heartbreak. And I love his writing. I love the portrayal of siblings. Again, I'm drawn to brothers. Yeah. And there's so much heart and emotion. I would love to sit down and write something with him, because I think we would mesh well together. I've not knowing the man, but I feel like we both have that really wacky out of left field humor, but we also embrace the seriousness and the emotional depth of character development. Another is if I could write side by side with Rebecca Ross. Just there again, just to learn from her. She writes in a way that I'm very drawn to and what I would aspire to be. And so that would be fun. But also, so not everyone has heard of him, but Michael J. Sullivan wrote the, and I never say this right, Rhaera Revelations. They're a epic fantasy series.
Okay.
He is a master at character-driven fantasy. His characters are just stunning. I would want to co-write something with him because he is so good. I would learn from him, and the world building is just amazing. Oh. At the same time, though, in his case, I feel like I could bring something to the table because his romance needs a little spicing up, okay? He writes the best slow burn romance throughout the course of this series. And you're just like, oh, get together. And they finally do. And it's, you don't get much more than a single chaste kiss or two. And I'm all, come on, I deserve more than this. You know, I feel like I could teach him a little bit about my spicy kissing trademark.
Yes.
You know, because it was like, I'm sorry, the reader deserves more kissing than this. It doesn't have to go further. Just give me some kissing.
Yep. Well, since that emotion built up over all that time, I'm kind of like, yeah.
Oh, I mean, it. Fortunately, the story is not about the romance. The romance is a side plot. It's like, it's a wonderful dessert on top of this epic story. And it's really, again, I'm going back to this theme, the two main male characters who are best friends, but radically different. You know, you have, it's the Sunshine and Grumpy dynamic between two friends, basically. And it would be as if Finn and Marcel, you know, the book was all them. but yeah, so I wouldn't mind sitting and writing a book alongside Michael J. Sullivan.
That is really cool. Yeah. I love your reasons too. So what do you feel like in kind of wrapping this up? Do you feel like there's any, we talked a little bit about that. Are there any other messages that you really hope readers take away from your books?
Well, so in the duology specifically, I would say the overriding theme throughout both books, it becomes very, it's mentioned in the first one, but it becomes very clear in the second one. To rest in the idea that there is a reason for everything. That is, we may never understand it. We like to think, okay, in heaven we'll understand. We may not even then, but then we won't care, you know. But yes, if there's a reason for everything, there is a plan for everything, and to let go of trying to understand why, because we're never going to understand the whys of everything. And that's okay. It's okay to let go. It's okay to just rest in the knowledge that there is a reason for it, and it's not our, for our happiness, but for our good. Because there is a difference. In my books overall, though, as I talked about, you know, wanting to leave people with a different perspective of men and male relationships and strong, non-toxic men. But also, I really, really love, this is why I like writing adult books and not YA. I really love presenting beautiful, committed, romantic relationships, especially between married people. I think we need that so badly. In our culture today, in both books and media, married couples are either treated as pathetic or a joke or something to get out of. You know, marriage is something to escape from. And I, that is so sad to me. And I feel like, yeah, I'm on a mission with all my books to present marriage as passionate. And yeah, you can lust after your spouse. It's okay then, you know, and to enjoy each other, but also the emotional intimacy, excuse me, and how the physical and the emotional align with each other, without necessarily delving into, you know, showing too much, of course. But there's so many ways you can show, and I think I get, I think right now I'm in a sweet spot of how I present these relationships. There's obviously passion and heat, and it's fun, but without taking it too far, you know.
And
The
I love,
door closes eventually.
so I remember that was another thing. If I tell, I picked up book one from a reel that you posted, but you know, as you're typing up book two about like the part where they're together should be like the best part, like so much, you know, especially in like the suspense genre. Like I feel like the suspense genre, usually we're just kind of at the end, you know, at the end it's like okay, they're starting to date, and it's like I feel like Unleashed was so different that way in that duology where it's like we get to see them then doing life, doing the hard things
We
and the good.
explore that what comes after the happily ever after.
And I love that, like I can only think of two times in like TV and movies where it's really shown as a very positive light, and it's like some of the, like I want more of those characters. I root way more for those characters than I do the cheating spouse trope. And it's
Oh
like,
yeah.
is this even popular? Like, yeah, okay.
There's no,
I think
there's been several movies, I'm trying to think, maybe not books, but movies that have come out in recent years, and a lot of them were under the title of romantic comedy, that it's basically, well, heck, let's even go back to, oh, a beloved rom-com classic, A Sleepless in Seattle, where you have Meg Ryan in this committed relationship with a man, she's living with him, and yet we are supposed to root for her getting with Tom Cruise because there's no fire in their relationship. She feels like there should be more. Now, we're talking about a universally loved romantic comedy, and I probably loved it then too when it came out, but I look back on it now and I'm all like, what the heck? She had this great guy. And yet now she's being, you know, ooh, the mystery guy across the country, and it really rankles me.
it's like the trope is like it, if it's new it's better, you know, and I feel like that's really done a disservice to the perception of romance as a genre, especially mm-hmm. if like coming from like a Christian like perspective, it's looked down yeah. on. I think that there's a lot to it, that the perception of that is that it breeds discontentment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's a way that we can shift that up and show it in a much more positive light of seeing these fictional characters. Well,
and it also almost always ends with the wedding being the apex yeah. of the relationship. You know what? Let me tell you, kids, that is just the beginning. I mean, for good and for bad, for better and worse, that yeah. is the beginning of it all. Yeah. And then without revealing anything, but you will know
yeah.
that is the very last line of the book is one of my favorite things I've ever written. Because you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. Because I can't put that thing in. I was actually going to text him, like, can I put that quote in a reel? But I'm like, but that's kind of giving too much away, is it? I don't know.
Well, you know what? Not if you just do the quote itself and you don't know where it's coming.
True.
You know, but it could be, we don't know where in the book it is.
True.
There's two lines in the book, though, that I I don't know if it's weird or not that I swoon over my own dialogue, but it was actually the last line in the last two chapters. So the last line, talking about books.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. I know. One. At first I was thinking, I'm like, are we thinking of different lines?
But no, it's something that Finn says to Sarah about yeah. books. Okay. Yeah. But then your poor podcast listeners are like, what? But yeah, the last line of the whole book, that to me, that is the message. That's the message right there, you know, in terms of romances in movies and in books, that no, you think you're there but you're not, and hey, there's going to be a lot more coming. So
yeah.
But yeah,
I love that. It also, it's like those are characters that you have hope. It's like, oh, they're still going to face stuff. They're still going to have arguments. They work through it together. I just love
yeah.
that. Yeah. I will totally go on a soapbox about that because I have mentioned that before about absolutely loving that uh-huh. aspect of being able to see that.
Mm-hmm.
So what is next for you?
I'm taking a break.
Okay.
Well, I have, when this book comes out, I will have released 3 books in 1 year.
That's intense.
That's intense, especially for a new writer. If somebody had told, like I said, 3 years ago, I was still drafting my first draft of my first book. I had no idea what was going to be coming. I have been extremely blessed to have so many opportunities and doors open to me. But I'm burned out, to be honest, and I'm tired. And plus, doing 3 books, if it was just the writing, it would not be an issue. It's all the editing. So editing, different writers feel differently. I actually enjoy editing in the sense that I like taking a mess and cleaning it up.
Yeah.
But whereas writing fills my cup, editing drains it. Mm. And so... it's just, I just want to take a year or however long it takes. I have 2 books that I'm actively working on right now, and I just want to write for a while. And read more books, because I haven't had as much time to read books as I would have liked during this time. So yeah, I'm, and plus I homeschool my 3 kids, so I'm doing a lot.
You're busy.
I have a lot going on.
It's like actually coming off of that, not to say it's like, well, give us more. What do you like, what are like, you know, right? So writing fills your cup. What are other things that you feel like you're going to like fill your creative tank with? What are things that specific things that you're looking forward to? Are there specific
reading? I have been a lifelong reader. My dad read Narnia aloud to me when I was 4 or 5, and I've never looked back since. I love to read. I am not genre specific. I will read almost anything you put in front of me. And I desperately need my cup filled with a lot of books. So that is my number one thing that I am looking forward to, is just really, you understand the never ending TBR.
Nope.
I am actually a relatively fast reader, not as fast as you are, but I am somewhat fast, but I haven't had time, and I'm really excited to read.
That's fantastic. Well, I really hope that best for you. Where can listeners follow you, keep up with you? If there's any announcements, do you have a newsletter that they can subscribe to up to date?
So with? Social media, I'm mainly active on Instagram. Technically I have a Facebook account, but who wants to be on Facebook these days? But I have just started a newsletter. And if you go to my website, amberkirkpatrick.com, very simple, you can sign up there. Or if you follow me on Instagram, where I am amber.kirkpatrick.writer, you can also sign up through my link tree there. But I'm just getting started with the newsletter. So it is a vast eternal work in progress, I'm sure. But Instagram is where I always respond to anybody who messages me. So unless you're obviously spam, anybody can shoot me a DM or give me a holler, follow me there, whatever. I love connecting with people. So
that is like, I just am boggled at how many indie or small press authors I would have missed had it not been for Instagram. Like, Instagram's amazing. Like, it's incredible.
I wouldn't have books out if it wasn't for Instagram, in the sense that, I mean, all my entire writer community that has supported me, I met through Instagram.
Yeah.
And then it was because I myself am rather fearless when it comes to approaching other writers. I was a new writer and I read this weird wolf book by AJ Skelly that I absolutely fell in love with the main character. And I just DM'd this woman out of nowhere saying, I love your Sam. I want him. He's my favorite character ever. And it started up this amazing friendship. And now she's publishing my books. So you never know where the connections will lead you. Even though I would happily be friends with AJ, whether she was publishing my books or not. But Instagram. Yeah. It's a lot of people knock social media and all that. I love social media and I love dealing with it. I mean, sometimes I get tired of the marketing and the pressure of feeling like you have to come up with content. But in general, I love it. I love talking to people.
Find a community. Mm-hmm. It's better than like being on stagnant social media where you're just after followers or likes or whatever. You know, it's like if you're developing like relationships, mm-hmm. connections with people, that's, I think, what it's actually supposed to be.
Yes. I have a friend who was complaining about engagement and keeps trying to go viral with reels and draw people in. Now, first of all, this person has like 15,000 followers already. And I don't even have 1,000. So I'm like, dude, okay, stop complaining. But I went back and looked over their Instagram feed and I was utterly fascinated. This person has a rabid following. Yeah. People love this person's books. Never replies to comments on posts.
Yeah.
It's like you will see all these comments and not a single reply to anyone. Mm-hmm. And I told this person, I was like, you need to engage. This isn't on them. This is on you.
Remember like starting out on Instagram and then like doing my little flat lays and everything like that, and I just felt like passed out the first time an author shared my picture to her story. It was like, it's like the ultimate fangirl experience, and that means so much to readers to make that connection, to just that reply and everything like that. You feel so seen, and I know it's like, it's a lot.
Authors, when somebody makes a reel or a post about your book that you didn't ask them to do.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think you were the first person to make a reel for Unleashed. You didn't already have like a friend connection.
Yeah, that like I yeah, it's like I'd followed you, but we hadn't got to chatting yet.
What I mean is, I've had friends who made reels
Oh,
about, you know, and but so that was the first time I'd had somebody I didn't know make. Oh,
no,
so.
that was, I love it. I love how liking the same books or reading the book can always start a friendship. That's just an awesome part of it.
Yeah, well, and the discussions that come, and how you can interpret it different ways. And that's the thing, as an author, once that book is out in the world, you cannot control what people think about it.
Yeah.
You
Well,
can,
and
you,
also
I mean,
like I find like aesthetic reels or pictures, and I'm like, that's another thing. It's like it's just about as hard as casting. It's like in my mind it looks this way, but there's no image like that. It's so hard.
yeah, and actually Unleashed and Released have been a lot easier because they're modern and they're contemporary. Because, you know, they say you're not supposed to use images off of Pinterest. Well, with those two books, I pulled everything from Canva. It was easy enough, you know.
Yeah.
Well, no, not everything. Early with Unleashed, I did pull a lot from Pinterest, but recently I've been able to do almost everything from Canva. But with my fantasy stuff, I just can't, because Canva's fantasy stuff is like something from a bad Renaissance festival, you know? And so if you want some good, solid imagery, you almost have to go to, you know, something like Pinterest.
Yeah, I know that's hard. Like I'm hard. Like I mean, I'll get away with it because I know I'm not. It's not like I'm marketing anything because I'm just doing it because I'm a reader. But I don't know if I'm breaking any laws or anything like that. So,
I don't know either. I just, you know, it's one of those, you do the best you can and just, okay.
I know. Oh, well, this has been such a great talk. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I hope listeners. They've hung in this long. You should definitely read. What's the name of your first book, your other book? We haven't even
Until the
talked.
Rising, Until the Rising.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. All right. And there's also, and that's, is that YA?
No. I don't
Oh,
write YA, at least. Now, that one was a little confusing and difficult to market because the main characters are of a YA age,
okay.
but it is an adult book in part because the series will span actually several decades. It
Okay.
goes on. So these
Huh.
characters are going to grow up and new characters come in and out and all that. So I can't limit it to YA. Even if
Got
I wanted to, which I didn't want to.
it. That's interesting. Okay, I did not know that. Yes. Love it. Okay, well, thank you
Thank you
again.
so much.
Hope you recharge that creative well.
There will be more books coming down the
That is awesome. Okay, until next time. Bye.
Bye.